back corner of the line and the baseline. Adam Johnson is so impressive right now. The way he is seeing the court and the way he's swinging, I think you're just obligated to keep the ball on Karai because Adam is just whipping and Karch is giving him perfect sets.
15th kill for AJ. Now we'll serve for the championship. Short! And Fanoi Moana was there.
Welcome to the Paper Courts Podcast. I am your host, Travis Mawerder. We have a pretty special one for you guys today. Kicking it back old school with Adam Johnson. He's a Manhattan Beach Open champ, and as you know, the MBO is coming up, and it is the granddaddy, the Wimbledon, the whatever you want to call it, of beach volleyball. So enjoy as I talk to Adam Johnson about everything from the game in its heyday, the golden era of the 80s and 90s up until the 96 Olympics and all the way up to our recent day with the Manhattan Beach Open coming up.
Okay. But yeah, I guess kind of take me through your path to volleyball. I know that there's no real traditional path for guys to get into beach volleyball. So I guess just kind of walk me through sort of how you got into it and what made you want to play at the level that you ended up playing at.
Well, you know, for me, it's probably different than a lot of guys. Further, just, you know, with how I started playing volleyball. I played played multiple sports, but volleyball was a big sport in Laguna Beach where I grew up. And Laguna Beach Volleyball Club had some clinics that were going on Sundays. This is probably when I was 12 or 13 years old. I think it's probably 13 years old. And I wasn't really doing anything, so my mom said, hey, why don't you just go do something and, you know, do these clinics? And so we did start out in the clinics, and, yeah, I fell in love with the sport. I played tennis at the time. I was a USDA-ranked tennis player in California. I think at the time I was ranked 26th in California, which,
oh wow,
you think that's good, but Rick Leach, who, I don't know if you know that name, but he and I went to middle school through college together, and his dad was the head coach of the tennis for the guys at USC. And Rick was number one, if you will, in California during those times. And he would beat me 6-1, 6-1. I mean, it wasn't even close. So yeah, I could say I was 26, but you know, between 26 and one was a big difference. So anyways. I started playing volleyball with Laguna Beach Volleyball Club on Sundays at their clinics, and then, you know, tryouts came for the junior Olympic team, and I made the team, and, you know, that whole indoor thing took off from there. You know, growing up in Laguna Beach, I really did not play beach volleyball very much. I was kind of more of a, you know, just kind of a beach rat, if you will, and just would go body surfing or, you know, whatever it was. I didn't surf. I just hang out at the beach, and then I go work or, you know, go play, you know, baseball in the summertime or whatever it was. But I probably played in, I'm guessing, maybe 5, you know, B, novice, AA tournaments before I just turned pro. Kind of went straight into it. When I was on the national team in 88 and 89, I played I think in 88 I played in like 5 or 6 events with Troy Tanner, and same again in 89. And then went overseas to play after the national team, went overseas to play a season over in Italy. And then in the summer of 90 I started on full time on the tour, and I had enough points to get into the main draw and all that kind of stuff at the time. And you know, by the end of the season, the 90 season, I took a third place at the U.S. Championships with Steve Timmons.
Okay.
So that was my path. And, of course, the next year was when I won my first event with Pat Powers and went on to win a few more with Ricky Lutes, including the U.S. Championships. So that was kind of my welcome to the professional league. You know, we played, like I said, I played with Troy in a handful of tournaments when we were on the national team together, and had some fun experiences out there, and just kind of, that's kind of the direction I knew I wanted to go.
Right. Well, I was curious, what made you decide? Because I know that overseas at the time, was overseas indoor? Because I know right now it's a lot more lucrative, financially speaking, than beaches at the time, than beaches now.
Yeah. Well, and it was indoors. I left the national team. I was, scraping by to, survive. And I needed $100 extra from the national team to survive. And by no means was I living the life of the life of scraping by. And, they couldn't give me another $100, and I had gotten an offer to go play overseas for, six figures, and basically came in with a check and my papers and said, I have to leave. I gotta make a living. I gotta be able to survive. And so, went over to Italy, made my living, for 4 months over there, and came back and started playing on the tour 100% and got a couple of good sponsors, and life was, that was the rest of my beach career.
Okay. And I know that, in the 80s and 90s, beach volleyball was kind of a pop culture phenomenon. And now that, I guess, sort of compare and contrast it to how it is now, just like what the lifestyle was like back then around beach volleyball.
I think,
and then,
yeah, for me, the lifestyle was, like everybody else's. I think in the 70s and 80s was probably the epitome, if you will, of the volleyball lifestyle. Playing at the beach all day, and from sun up until sundown, and playing cards in between eating, going in the water, from a training aspect, you trained all day. I think when I started playing, I know that it became a little bit more on the professional side. I don't know if it became more professional, but I guess people had a different outlook, and the money was much greater, so there was more emphasis on training, specific training, for a shorter period of time, I guess. Because I know for a fact we didn't spend, all day down at the beach, although sometimes I did. A lot of times, a lot of times it was from, 8 to 12 or something like that. And then, you're off to the gym and then maybe to the track after that. So, it got a little different from what I know, from the 70s and the 80s. And then in the 90s, we were playing for, I don't want to say a bajillion dollars, but a lot more money than they're playing for now. And it's been that way for a long time, which is kind of sad, but that's the reality of it. So, but I enjoyed the travel, going to different cities, meeting different people, coming in early, doing the appearances that we were dealing with our sponsors and things like that. So, it was just a great time to be involved. Not that the 70s or 80s wasn't, or even now, but that was just, that seems, everybody talks about the golden era. That seemed to be everything. Live NBC coverage, you had a lot of money. I personally came in at the right time, and I became, I went from zero to hero in a matter of a year or two, where it might have been somebody 5-6 years before they get that well known, right? And just because, the first times that NBC Live was on, my partner and I happened to be on 5 or 6 of them, of the telecast. So you're talking national television live, there you go. Welcome, here's Adam Johnson, and everybody kind of knew me. And there's people that were jealous from that standpoint, but I think that's just the transition that it made over the years.
Yeah. And you came into beach volleyball at such an interesting time, around kind of that early 90s when St. John was trying to get it started overseas, and there was kind of a weird rivalry going on between the guys who wanted to go overseas and the guys who wanted to stay in the States. I guess, tell me a little bit about just what that was like. Was there as big of a rift between St. John and the guys who wanted to get it going internationally, and Karts and the guys who wanted to keep it kind of local in the States?
Yeah,
it's hard for me. I mean, I don't know everything about it because I was never in all the meetings and all that, all the above, right?
Right.
And I'm kind of one of those guys where if you're in the meeting and you heard exactly what happened, you know what's going on, right? We weren't in those meetings, and of course we heard what the AVP wanted us to hear. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know if it was the total truth, but you know, it was us against the rest of the world. And yeah, there definitely was a rift. And was it warranted? I'm not totally sure. You know, I think that, you know, it's hard to say. You talk to St. John, and of course he's going to say, absolutely not. I'm trying to do what I need to do to help grow the sport.
Right.
And which I agree. And over the years I'm hearing stuff and I'm seeing that maybe that was a good thing. We'll never know. And, you know, the rift was there definitely. Was it a good thing for the sport? I don't know. I don't know if it was good to have a rift like that, but it was interesting because the international players didn't come over and play on our tour because they didn't want to get beat. We were the best in the world at the time.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, once it became an Olympic sport, that's when that's just my opinion, but that's when the tour became non-existent, but it became where it is today. It's basically, at least I believe, I'd like to have it grow again, but it's kind of a satellite tour for the Olympics.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. And I know that the qualification process for the Olympics was its own saga and had with its own drama. So when it was announced that it would be the top two teams international, I mean, what was the push like to get the U.S. just to have a U.S. Olympic trial? Because I know that was kind of the biggest argument was we want to have an Olympic trial rather than having just our top two international teams, because nobody wanted to go play on what was then the satellite tour, which was the FIVB.
Yeah, well, it was a huge push because, you know, there was going to be a power struggle, and it was the AVP against the FIVB. And again, this is just my opinion, but as soon as we said we're going to the Olympics and agreed to that, we became the satellite tour, because we used to be able to say we have the best players on the planet on our tour, which was true. But as soon as we had to start going overseas to qualify for the Olympics, now that tour can say they have the best in the world on their tour. So, you know, if you want, you know, if you want to play on the best tour and have all that, there you go right there. They have the best, you know, the FIVB now has the best players in the world on their tour, and they were the tour. You know, it was in 2000 when that really happened, because then we had to go on the FIVB tour and qualify, you know, to get into the Olympics. So at that point, after 2000, that's kind of where, you know, the AVP just kind of stayed where they were. I mean, I think we went bankrupt in 96 or 7? And the money's
it
never
was
been.
Somewhere kind of in between that, that 96, 97 season.
And the tour's never recovered. I mean, they're trying to, and I think that what Donald's son is doing is great and admirable, and I'm part of it too. I'm working with the, you know, the AVP Academy that they've got here in Austin, so I'm trying to help it grow again. But from where it was, it's a long distance from the atmosphere and all the above. And I think what they're trying to regenerate is exactly that. So I think they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, New York looked awesome. I don't know if you had a chance to watch any of that, but that looked like a great tournament.
Yeah. No, I was, I was watching it. I'm kind of engaged again. And, you know, I still don't like the new rules. I'm just going to be one of those old farts
that doesn't like the new rules. me, right? And I understand it's the progression of the sport, but I think the size of the court was awesome, and I mean awesome for the girls. You know, you get to watch these girls, these athletic girls, play volleyball now, and it's fun to watch. Whereas when we were playing and they were playing on the same size court, you know, as an indoor court, it was very boring to watch because they're just not as physical as guys covering the same amount of court. So yeah. I think it's been great for the girls. And again, I'm personally, I just think it's a different, I still like it. I still like it and I still like watching it. It's just a completely different game from when I played. That's all.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely made a lot of changes.
Yeah, and everybody's comparing the two, right? But you can't compare them because they're just two totally different games. I mean, some things you can, but other things you can't. I mean, you know, everybody's like, well, you know, could Phil, you know, Phil would definitely be a dominant player back on the old court, and we're like, well, we'll never know, and that's the great debate.
Yeah.
You know, because if he had to deal with the jump serves that we were able to produce, that, you know, a lot of people, smaller people like myself, were able to produce, I don't know that, you know, he would, you know, you don't know. That's all. I'm sure he could, but we'll never know.
Yeah. It's like when people make the argument, you know, the 96 Bulls versus this year's Golden State Warriors, you know, you'll never know.
Yeah, you'll never know. And it's definitely different positions. I mean, it's just, you know, different. I mean, the athletes are just, they're bigger, stronger, and all the above. But are they smarter? You know, who knows? You know, that's part of it too. I mean, you know, when I was playing with Karch, a lot of the teams that we were playing against were way more physical than us. But mentally, we beat these guys to death. So there's something to say for that. But you were saying about Randy and I?
Yeah, I was asking just kind of how that partnership came together. It seemed kind of, not last minute, but sort of a little bit hasty before the trials.
It was, and we had played together prior to that. At the time, I was playing with Jose. And, of course, I couldn't play with Jose in the qualifier. So... you know, that's when Randy and I kind of got back together and gave it a whirl.
I remember watching, like I said, I was watching YouTube videos from that a ton, and I think it was Paul Sunderland who was the commentator, and he said that the Olympic trials was the most important, or probably the biggest volleyball tournament to date in the United States. Would you agree with that? I guess, how was the trials different just in terms of atmosphere and having an Olympic berth on the line for one tournament?
Well, it was definitely, you know, the pressure was definitely there. Was it the biggest event in the United States at the time? I don't know. I mean, I think Manhattan Beach and Hermosa Beach, you know, fan-wise, was a much bigger tournament. I think maybe what was on the line in Atlanta was, you know, in everybody's eyes, bigger. But I think that's in the eye of the beholder. Again, you know, I'm hindsight's 20/20, but if the AVP doesn't play in the Olympics and we stick together and continue on and try and have this kind of underground fun party atmosphere, you know, I mean, no one knows, and it's one of those great debates again, it might have grown back to what it was. Did we necessarily need to be on NBC? I personally don't believe we did, because I think we had a cult following, if you will, and almost an underground sense. And I think that's something that really kept, you know, the interest. It was the lifestyle, the party atmosphere, the athletes, all the above. As soon as we gave that up to go to the Olympics, completely different story.
Right. And what was, I guess, kind of take me through your trials, just kind of the kind of
story of my life.
Kind of a couple of the matches, yeah. Because I know you made it pretty far, you know, to the semis, and then I know that.
Well, we were in the finals. Randy and I were in the finals of '96. We had two opportunities to get one of the spots, and right before our first match against, I can't remember if we played. Did we play Carson? I think we played Carson Kent second. So I guess it was Dodd and Witt. You know, right? I mean, 30 seconds before it started, you know, the big story. Randy, you know, someone threw a ball under Randy when he was hitting some jump serves. He came down and tweaked his ankle. You know, and that was pretty devastating. He played through the pain, of course, and it definitely affected his game. And we ended up not winning that game. And, you know, the next day, I mean, he could barely walk on the ankle. So, you know, that injury, you know, caused us, I believe, you know, a spot on the team. You know, now does that mean that we were going to win the gold or the silver? No. But it definitely, you know, I believe we're going to be one of the two teams, you know, but that's, you know, that's just what I believe. And everybody else would say, no, they would have beat you, you know, whatever. So, it is what it is. But in 2000, you know, when I was playing with Karch, we were in the qualifier and all we needed to do was qualify into the tournament. And then we get one of the two spots. And one match before our final match, to get, you know, and we've made every main draw too, so it wasn't like we weren't going to make it. But one match right before, towards the end of that match, to get to the main draw, Karch hit a ball and, dislocated his shoulder.
Oh.
And so I was done, man. You know. I mean, I was an alternate for 2000. I went down to Sydney just in case someone got hurt before they started or something. But, you know, that was it. So that's kind of the story of my Olympic trials was, you know, both having two injuries to my partners. And,
man.
It's unfortunate and all the above. And I look at what could have been and all that. But, you know, it is what it is and you move forward. So. You know, I'm very happy with my career and what I did and what I'm doing.
And you got to play with and against two of arguably the greatest beach volleyball players ever. You know, I think St. John and Karch would both be kind of on the volleyball Mount Rushmore, if you will. What made those guys so good? Because, I mean, you go back through the BVB and pretty much every tournament, you know, was either won or was in a final. You know, you either saw St. John or Karch with whoever it was they were playing with.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of separated them and put them kind of in a league of their own?
Well, I think that, you know, you get in, you know, when you get to that level, you're talking the mental part of the game. And I think that their mental capacity was just that much better than everybody else's. And they proved that, you know, week in and week out. They were very diligent with their training. I think that they looked at this as a profession, and they went about it as a profession. And that's the thing, I think, that at the end of the day, because they're both not the most physical. I mean, I think Karch is probably more physical than St. John. But at the same token, you know, St. John has, you know, in some instances, you don't need that, you know, that's the physicality out there as much as the mental part of the game. So, I think that they were both able to use their, you know, abilities to their advantage. You know, much like, you know, some of the other players. I mean, you know, like I told you earlier, Karch and I played against teams that were much more physical than us, you know, maybe 6'8", you know, and just beasts. But mentally, you know, we beat these guys. And
right.
We're still strong. We're still strong. But, you know, I think that was the thing that set them apart. I think that, you know, for Sinjin and Randy, winning as many terms, I mean, that's, you know, it's hard to do. You know, Karch and Kenton, I think we're right there with those guys, but, that's kind of the difference between that and everybody else.
I'm assuming that you probably watched the 96 quarterfinal in Atlanta between Karch and Sinjin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I know that coming into it, you know, there had been some bad blood between Karch and Sinjin, but that kind of took it to a whole new level. When you were watching, I mean, was it almost inevitable that they would somehow cross paths in the Olympics, given their history?
It's hard to say, you know, in that scenario, but it seems like, you know, in a normal AVP tournament, if you dumped your partner or your partner dumped you, somehow you guys were always going to play against each other. And that was,
right.
That was the match that everybody wanted to go see. So, yeah, I'm sure, you know, it was set up that way. There's a lot of that stuff that kind of goes behind the scenes. But, you know, they're anticipating these guys, you know, winning certain matches. And if they do, then they're going to meet here because – I think sometimes it's going to be inevitable, but and I've seen it firsthand that, you know, they don't always want an American final or a Brazil or two of any country in the final. You know, they always want, you know, somebody different. So that was one way, you know, to ensure only, you know, potentially one would make it through. But you know, who knows? I mean, there's, I don't want to say it's a conspiracy theory, but it was very obvious in 2000 when they switched the seeds a few weeks before. You know, they were going off the world rankings, and Brazil, I think at the time, was 1 and 2, and all of a sudden they changed it to where the host country, which was Australia, got the number one seed, which pushed. You know, those guys down, so now they're 2 and 3, and they got to play each other in the semis. So only one's going to go.
Right.
You know, so I'm sure that stuff, you know, is looked at, and, you know, people are put in certain spots for whatever reason, but, you know, that's the way it turned out. And that was a match that everybody's still talking about and probably will for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting to watch because I guess I felt that I figured Karch and Kent were just going to smoke those guys, and I still think they should have. But I think under the circumstances, for whatever reason, you know, Karch got a little rattled. And I think that he just felt that he had so much pressure on him. I'm not saying that he folded. I mean, they won, but I think that they could have done, you know, I think they could have done a lot better, but it was just one of those matches. The match of the 90s, you know, kind of.
Yeah, definitely. I watched that one more than a few times. And so at the end of the 96 Olympics, I mean, it looked like beach volleyball had pretty much everything it could have possibly had going for it. Right now we have a pretty big rivalry. It's on the world stage. And the AVP is kind of as big, you know, as it ever was. And then just like that, you know, it's bankrupt, you know, at the end of the 96 or kind of somewhere in that 97 range. So what was that like as a player? I mean, this had been your livelihood, right? So what happens as a player when, you know, your employer goes bankrupt?
Well, you know, and again, a lot of it had to do with who was running the show. And, you know, I was hearing some nightmare stories about some things, you know, I think it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, someone that was, you know, in in close proximity to it of what was really going on. And, you know, it's kind of amazing to hear all those kind of things. Whether they're true or not, I don't know. I could see it, but, you know, it all came down to who we had running the show. And, you know, we did have a lot of players on the board and whatnot. And were they all businessmen? Not even close. Some were, but a lot of them weren't. And I don't know that, you know, everybody was watching out with, you know, like the Jerry Solomons that were running our program, you know, because I had heard that he was putting money in his company out on the East Coast. And, you know, it's all hearsay, but, you know, it makes sense. That's why we went bankrupt or something. You know, not that particular reason, but there's a lot of little things that were going on. But you never know unless you're there. And, you know, unfortunately, we just had some people running the show that didn't have any checks and balances, I guess.
Right. And what did you do to fill that gap between, you know, then and when Leonard Armato got it back going again? Because I know that, you know, AVP kind of had a couple events here and there, but nothing super sustainable for, you know, the career guys.
Yeah, it was, I mean, you know, after 2000, you know, on my last run, you know, for, you know, to try and go to the Olympics and whatnot, that was my last, what I call my last real season. Although I did come back in 2005 to kind of see what the new rules were like and all that. And, it was definitely a different ball game, different vibe, different everything. And, you know, it was sad because, you know, for someone like myself, I mean, I was young. I think I was, if I'm not mistaken, I was 36 when I stopped playing. And considering Karch stopped playing, I think when he was 47,
yeah,
you know, I lost a lot of years. And, you know, looking back at it, you know, of course I had an injury that was going to require surgery to my foot. And, you know, my doctor had told me, well, you know, this is what we need to do, but it's not a for sure thing that's going to, you know, cure you, if you will. And your toe might start growing into the other toe later on. And you have to get that, you know, you have to get it fused. And I think if we were making more money like we were in the, you know, the early to mid 90s, I probably would have kept playing. I would have done the surgery and I would have taken my chances probably. But considering we were really playing for peanuts going forward, I was like, you know, I'd rather have a healthy life. You know, I mean, see some of these football players that can barely walk and stuff. I mean, they're making millions, of course. And we weren't making millions, but we were making good money. I just looked at at my life a little differently, I guess, from that standpoint. I wasn't, you know, at the time I wasn't real happy with the new rules, you know, and a lot of people weren't, but that's what it was. Either you play or you don't play. And, you know, that coupled with my, you know, the new process and my foot, I just said, maybe it's just time to walk away, you know, and that's kind of what I did. You know, started doing some other things. We opened up a business with my wife, a boutique in Laguna, and then, you know, then we ended up moving and I also had an indoor program, junior indoor program as well, for a few years, and then we ended up moving out here to Texas, where I just kind of continued that. So
okay.
It was just one of those things that I wasn't, you know, willing to sacrifice my body for something, for a product at the time that didn't have the same pizzazz, I guess, that it used to.
And I know that one tournament in particular that will not hold maybe the bittersweet memories of, you know, the various Olympic trials for you is definitely Manhattan. And that anytime I talk to a player, you know, of kind of the old school rules and all that, I mean, Manhattan's usually one of the first things that you guys just kind of talk and rave about. So what makes that tournament so special? And I mean, throughout the years, just, I guess, why do you think that that tournament is probably considered, aside from the Olympics, the best beach volleyball tournament in the world?
Well, I think that, you know, again, I kind of came into it at the perfect time, and so I wasn't one of those guys that's out there, you know, playing for a beach chair and a you know, dinner at Chart House. And, you know, from what I can understand, that, you know, Manhattan Beach is kind of where the big tournament was, and it was the oldest ongoing, you know, tournament in the ABP and in the beach volleyball history. So I think from that standpoint, it just became that kind of enormous, you know, Wimbledon type event, which I had the privilege of winning twice. So I'm pretty excited. Lost in the finals a couple times, and, you know, it seems like that tournament, along, for me at least, along with Hermosa, U.S. Championship, you know, I had a lot of success at. So I think that just everything, the history about it, that it's one of that it's the oldest tournament, I think they just wanted to continue that. And, you know, I think that's, you know, the South Bay is kind of the hub, if you will, of where beach volleyball really was. You know, it wasn't like that down in Orange County. You know, us guys behind the orange curtain and all that kind of stuff. We come up, you know, and sneak under the curtain every once in a while, you know, in the early days. But, you know, that was where it was at.
And is there anything quite like, you know, walking down the Manhattan Beach Pier and, you know, saying, hey, that's me, twice?
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty cool. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like the Hollywood, you know, Walk of Stars, you know. I think that's something that, you know, I mean, do the young kids even have a clue who I am nowadays? Absolutely not. I'm sad to say. I'm sad to say a lot of them don't even know who Karch is. So if they don't know who Karch is, they have no clue who I am, right? So, but, you know, it's the memories that we have, and, you know, they're kind of cemented actually in the pier. So, yeah, it's pretty cool to be able to, you know, walk up that pier and see your name on there a couple times.
For sure. And I know that just throughout time, you know, beach volleyball as a sport has been just by nature volatile. You know, you had the golden era, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, and then bankruptcy, and then Armada kind of built it up, and then another bankruptcy, and now we're in sort of the Donald Sun phase of the beach volleyball life. I mean, where do you think the future for the sport is going, you know, especially keeping in mind the introduction of the women's college game?
Well, don't even get me started on that. It's going to the women. The women are taking over the world. you know, it, yeah, no, I, where is it going? I think it's going to be on the same path that it's on for a while. I don't know that it can get any bigger. I mean, I think you've got the international, you know, tour, of course, which, you know, they have some pretty unbelievable events all around the world. You know, like I said, Donald Sun, you know, is trying to rejuvenate the ABP. I think he's doing a great job. We're really going after the grassroots, you know, to kind of restart and reboot, you know, the younger generation and get them, you know, out there, up and coming. I mean, you know, I work with a girl from California, and she's going to be going to Florida State after next year. She'll be a senior next year in high school, but, you know, she's now playing in the ABP Next tournaments, which, you know, is kind of the qualifiers and the older ladies that are playing the game that are good.
Right.
And it's completely different from the junior tournaments that she's winning all these medals in. Right. But she's going to the next level now, at the ABP Next next. And she's actually accumulating points now for her future. So as she plays through college and continues to play in these events during the summer, I would think with this particular girl, once she gets out of college, she'll be able to get into the main draw right away. And so I think that that's what AVP is really going after, is these, you know, the younger players now, and just, you know, bringing them in that way. And, and hopefully growing the sport in the United States. You know, I think that it's still viable that, people can make a, you know, athletes can make a living on it. It's making sure that the product is the best it can be and the most exciting it can be.
And speaking of women taking over the world, I know that the Leonard Armato kind of he merged the men's and women's tours under the same umbrella when he took over in 01. And that just so happened to be the time when a little-known tall, blonde-haired woman named Kerry Walsh was joining the tour. So
right.
How good of a move was that to kind of to join the men and women under one tour? And just in terms of Kerry Walsh and Misty May, I mean, what did they do for the sport?
Well, I think they did a ton from the women's side of things, for sure. Don't get me wrong. I think they were the Karsh and Kanter, the St. John and Randy, for sure. I think that they came, again, for them, came in at the right time when the court changed for them, you know, the size of the court and everything. And I think that made the women's game that much more desirable. And, you know, people wanted to watch it more. It was more exciting. I think if the men were playing on the big court, I think that they would be more exciting now as well. But, of course, they're playing on the smaller court, and it's just a completely different game. Of course, you know, there's always the comparison where, well, you can't do that. We got to be equal. And it's like, well, you know, it's kind of like in, you know, NBA and WNBA. I mean, what would happen if you brought the rim down to 9 feet?
Yeah.
You're having some girls go up there with five time pajama and having some fun and some entertainment, you know, because that's what people want. People want to see that kind of stuff, you know. But, you know, that's happening for beach volleyball. And you know, again, I think that the guys could still be playing on the bigger court, and I think that it would be it would definitely be a different game, you know. Even if they had some, you know, the net rule and all that kind of stuff and the different ball, at least you're still able to cover that big court like girls are able to cover the small court now. Still,
right?
I mean, when I played on the big court, I was probably, you know, on a defensive side of things, I was maybe touching, I'm just throwing this out, 50% of all defensive moves. But when I came back in 2005, I felt like I was touching 75-80% of the balls, because the court is that much smaller and it's just that much easier to touch the ball. So is that a good thing? I don't know. I mean, my jump serve was non-existent, so that was kind of something that I did. But if, you know, looking at it, I mean, if I had a Phil Dellhauser in front of me, I'd underhand serve and say, go deal with my block, right?
Yeah.
And then when they serve to me, they're gonna serve me a fluff ball like everybody else. I mean, there's some guys that are serving some good serves. Don't get me wrong, but it seems like it's the guys that are 6'6" and up that are able to really take advantage of a jump serve, right? That's just what I see, because most of these guys are hitting these little jump float serves, and if you've got somebody that can pass like a Todd Rogers, you know, when you're playing with Phil can get underneath that ball easily with his hands. He's got great hands, which makes it easier because the serve's not as tough, and the perfect pass. You know, it's kind of like Finjan and Randy. You know, everybody serves Finjan. Why? I don't know. Because he was the best. He was the best passer. You know, you're letting the best setter set him, and he's very crafty with his shots and his play. You know, when I played with Ricky Lutes in the finals of U.S. Championships in 91, we went to Randy. Randy made some errors. Finjan's not the best bump setter, you know, and we ended up winning. And I don't, you know, that was just, that was part of it right there. It's you know, going up who you believe you can go up against, and but it seemed like everybody was, oh, he's, you know, Sinjin's a smaller guy. You know, it's like, well, okay, yeah, he's the best passer, and Randy's arguably the best setter, and that makes the game pretty easy when you got those two things going.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, so.
That ends my conversation with Adam Johnson. A huge thank you to Adam Johnson. Looking forward to seeing some of the old school guys. I don't think Adam is coming out to Manhattan, but looking forward to seeing some of the more old school guys out of Manhattan. I know that that's a big one for them to stop by, and I will see y'all out there.